Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Well, as you know, this week we celebrate Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And so I thought I'd read you a Rosh Hashanah story. It's called Rosh Hashanah, and was written by Yenta Serdatsky. She was a Yiddish writer who exemplifies the enormous difficulties experienced by Yiddish women writers in achieving recognition. Serdatsky was born in Lithuania in 1877. In 1905, she left her husband and three children and went to Warsaw to pursue a literary career. Her first story, Miral, was published there in 1905. She emigrated to the United States in 1907 and wrote stories and plays which were published in many Yiddish periodicals. She died in 1962 at the age of 85. Serdatsky's fiction and dramatic works focus mainly on women like herself, immigrants who came to America from European, mainly Russian, left-wing political movements, seeking to build an ideal society together with like-minded male comrades. Instead, they face alienation and loneliness in a society that has little place for radical intellectual women. Serdatsky's leading characters, who are involved in liaisons, are inevitably exploited by lovers and husbands. Nevertheless, her narratives abound in lonely women searching for love and faith. This story is taken from the anthology Beautiful as the Moon, Radiant as the Stars, Jewish Women in Yiddish Stories, edited by Sandra Bark and published by Warner Books in 2003. Major holidays such as this one are often times when we remember our childhood and family celebrations. Sometimes we think of a particular holiday food or special family traditions that only we had. But no matter how much our lives have changed, no matter how far away we have moved from our roots, either physically or philosophically, holidays often trigger a kind of nostalgia. This is what happens in the story I'm going to read. Rosh Hashanah by Yenta Serdatsky. Years ago, I was at home during the high holidays. Immediately afterward, I was planning to move to the city where I spent the holidays last year, but more about that later. I was already a freethinker by then, my young mind full of new ideals and aspirations. Yet for the entire month before the holidays, I felt restless. Why? I'm not sure. Perhaps our shtetl was having an effect on me. In these small towns, the atmosphere before a holiday becomes drenched in holiness. Away from the smoke-blackened sky and the deafening noise of the big city, you find yourself getting caught up in the spirit of the special occasion. A week before Rosh Hashanah, when we began saying the Slichos, my mother, a pale and dreamy woman, became unusually serious. My father, by nature a person with a temper, turned mild and generous. In the shop, he even promised 20 pounds of flour to Rachelea, the seamstress, who owed him a long-standing debt. But most marvelous of all was my grandfather. Oh, grandfather, my silver grandfather, how can I hold back the tears as I think of you? My grandfather's beard is so long and white, his face so pure and pale that no other name will do but silver. Oh, how I love him. With the approach of the holiday, a hallowed tranquility stole over our household. Grandfather seldom spoke. As he gazed dreamily into the distance from under bushy silver brows, his face shone with a pious solemnity. In those days, I'm sure, he was living not in this world, but in that beautiful, fantastic other world, where God is enveloped in the light of the divine presence and angels sing songs of praise. I felt somewhat ashamed in front of them all, especially my grandfather, because by that point I no longer believed in the other world. So I would leave the house to visit a friend or just stand in the street looking into the blue distance. As the holiday drew closer, I became more and more unsettled. Before a holiday, I always used to help my mother with the housework, but this year I couldn't. My mother, my pale, dreamy mother, said nothing. Perhaps her maternal heart could sense what was happening in her daughter's soul. On the evening before the holiday, the house felt both sorrowful and festive. Mother had put no raisins in the challah, no saffron in the fish. It is forbidden to decorate on Rosh Hashanah, so the house was decked out in white. White curtains, white tablecloths, white pillowcases and sheets, but no colorful flowers or ribbons. These Mother was saving for Sukkot. We ate in silence, our faces festive but grave. I had selected a book to read during the meal, but I didn't even bring it to the table. I didn't want to insult the prayer books that my dear family members were taking with them to the synagogue. After dinner, my father sat sighing quietly. Mother was weeping. My grandfather drew close to me. When his delicate, trembling hands touched my hair, I shivered as if a holy current were flowing through me. And when he began to recite the blessing over me in his tender, mournful voice, I couldn't restrain my tears. I didn't sleep well that night, and the next morning I woke early. Standing by the open window, I looked out into the street. The peaceful blue sky covered the shtetl, and the sun, just emerging from the rosy dawn, gazed calmly over the holiday street, which was already crowded with people. The whole town was on the way to the synagogue, yet everyone was as quiet as if led by a host of silent angels. There went Bendet, one of the town fathers, a tall, handsome man in his middle years. A light breeze toyed with his long, blonde beard. Sunbeams played around his slim frame, and long shadows grew from his feet. How fine he looked! And here came Leah Esther, the oldest woman in town, wearing a white dress and a white bonnet with sky-blue ribbons that fluttered in the breeze like a flag of honor. Walking straight and tall in spite of her age, she looked proud. At her age, she had sung more praises to the Almighty than anyone else. A constellation of white dresses sparkled before my eyes, blue ribbons fluttered in the air, colorful kerchiefs shimmered in the sun, and the faces were so pensive, so holy. Looking at it all, I felt my heart grow tender and sad, and at the same time wonderfully light. That was 2 years ago. Last year, in the big, noisy city of B, I didn't even know the holidays were approaching. I was giving lessons to 4 pupils, studying for exams, and working in our political circle. We wouldn't have known it was Rosh Hashanah if not for the fact that most of our employers were Jews. Workers and tutors alike had the 2 days off. We scheduled meetings for both days. Every free moment had to be used for agitation. On the first day of the new year, we went to a remote corner of the city and crammed ourselves into one tiny room. The air was thick with tobacco smoke, yet we emerged with shining faces. We were living in the future. The next day we were arrested. For 3 months we sat in prison. After that, some of us were exiled to the cold villages of Siberia. Others they set free, including me, on the condition that we leave Russia for good. We had comrades who had fled to America, so we crossed the ocean and came here. I asked my landlady not to wake me, because I wasn't going to work. A pious woman, with no children of her own, she threw me a grateful look. At least she still has a Jewish heart, I read in her face. I'd made up my mind to sleep late. Yet, as soon as the sun peeked in my window, I was awake, full of jitters. Today's the first day of Rosh Hashanah, was my first thought. I'd felt unsettled for days, ever since I heard my landlady chopping noodles for the holiday. It's funny what can set a person off. For me, that sound brought back my old home with a rush. After a while, my landlady and her husband left for services. In the silence, I felt more uneasy than ever. I turned to the wall, pulled the blanket over my head, and tried to go back to sleep, but it was hopeless. My memories of last year, and especially of the year before, wouldn't leave me alone. Grandfather, dear grandfather, the words came bursting forth, how confusing and strange and lonely life can be. My melancholy thoughts bored into my head, and a gnawing pain filled my heart. My friends from home, Helenka and Manya, had planned to work today. These two are all I have. The rest are scattered to the four winds. Who cares about the holiday? They said it's a waste of time. For me, Helenka added with a sarcastic smile, the holidays were over a long time ago. I adore Helenka. She's clever, lively, and sensitive. Manya, on the other hand, I find quite irritating. She has a strong character, but everything she does comes out vulgar and graceless. For them, staying home for the day would indeed have been a waste. They're barely supporting themselves as it is. I'm no better off, yet on this day I just couldn't bring myself to go to work. Nor could I go back to sleep. Feeling gloomier than ever, I turned toward the window. A few rays of sunshine crept in through the crack in the green curtains and lingered on the green plastered walls. The green and the sunshine awakened something inside me, and my heart began to throb. Exactly what I was reminded of, I don't know. Maybe the green, sun-dappled meadow where I loved to spend long hours tending our goat when I was small. On the wall over the little table, I'd put up pictures of my acquaintances from V. A sunbeam glided over the photos, and my heart beat faster. My dear, beloved comrades, together we had struggled and hoped. When would we see one another again? Never, never, a voice in my heart responded. Volodya's in Siberia. Solomon and Sonya are in prison. Who knows if the rest of them are still alive? The room felt too confining, so I dressed and went out. It was early. People were still on their way to the synagogue. I looked thirstily into the face of every passerby, searching for a resemblance to Bendet, to Leah Esther, to my mother. I don't want to compare anyone to my grandfather. To me, he is holy. But in vain. Old women with skin-like parchment shuffled along, more like ghosts than human beings. Once in a while, an old, thin man with a long, pointed beard went by, and then some plump, roly-poly women and well-fed men. Yes, they were carrying holy books under their arms, but something didn't look right. The sorrowful holiness of 2 years past was missing, and so were the idealistic strivings of last year. Here, all was crude and crass. The faces said nothing, neither good nor bad. My heart grew heavier and sadder than ever, and muffled sighs erupted from my breast. Across the street, two young women were sitting on the stoop. Both had little babies, which was why they couldn't go to the synagogue. One of them I knew a little. We often ran into each other. Once as I passed by, I'd heard her aim a curse in my direction. She'd run away from home because of the pogroms, I figured, and now that things were going well for her, here, she thought that if only people like us would stop stirring things up, there'd be no more troubles for the Jews. Now, as she talked to her friend, she flicked her eyes at me like daggers. Her lips moved, and I had the feeling she was cursing me again. As an enlightened person, I'm accustomed to laughing off curses, but now I felt as if the hair on my head were standing on end. I looked away. To the left, I spied the black bridge of the elevated train. Off to the right went the trolley cars with their mournful clatter. I lifted my eyes to the cheerless sky. It was gray with smoke and dust. I went back into the house and sat down to read, but the words wiggled on the page. I lit the stove and put on water for tea. When it was ready, I lifted my glass, but I couldn't drink. My throat was tight with tears. All of a sudden, there was a timid knock at the door. "Come in." It was Helenka. I breathed a little easier. "Come, Emma," she said without looking at me. "Let's go." I examined her face, which was twitching nervously. How sad she looked. My hands dropped to my lap. "Where to?" I asked. "Anywhere," she blurted out. "A park, a street, anything, not to sit at home." "I thought you were working today," I said. "I couldn't." A sad smile flickered around her mouth. I got halfway there and had to turn around. I didn't need to ask more. Her voice told me everything. "All right," I said, "let's go." I had to put a few stitches in my dress, and as Helenka waited, she paced restlessly around the room. She began to sing, her voice sounding nervous, not quite right. "Arise, ye prisoners of starvation," she sang. "Arise, ye wretched of the earth." But instead of finishing the stanza, she switched to another, then to a mazurka, then a love song, and then suddenly she was singing in a stirring, poignant voice, "Verjommert, verlockt von sein Heim verjockt," wailing, betrayed, and driven from home. Her voice began to quaver, and she fell silent. I could feel the tears coming. Afraid to look at her, I began hastily to change my clothes as she continued pacing around the room. My hair needed combing. I went to the mirror in the front room where the light was murky and dim. Here and there, a ray of sun pierced the green curtains and fell on the patterned rug, the flowered wallpaper, the glass dishes. As I stood in the doorway, all the colors swirled together and cast a spell. My heart aching, I dropped my hands once again and stood lost in thought. "Why am I living here?" I asked myself. "What do I have in my life? Not the holy, poetic stillness of the shtetl, and not the exhilaration of the struggle. Not my dear family members from home, and not my beloved comrades. Here is only loneliness, smoke, noise, sweat, rudeness, and the reward for it all? Nothing but a crust of bread." From the kitchen, Helenka's pacing grew more restless still. I felt sorry for her, my only friend in the world, and although I felt like throwing myself on her and pouring out all my thoughts in a flood of tears, I didn't want to make things harder for her. And so, standing before the mirror in the dimness, I forced myself to begin combing my hair. But suddenly my body began to tremble. At that moment, my face bore an uncanny resemblance to my grandfather's. There was a roaring in my ears, and the blood rushed to my face. A rainbow-colored mist shimmered before the mirror, and a wavering column of pale figures began to emerge from afar. Volodya, Sonya, Solomon. All at once I could plainly see the tall, refined figure of my grandfather, the velvet skullcap perched high on his head, and the deep wrinkles creasing his pure white forehead. Raising his silver brows, he looked at me, his eyes so sad. He tottered toward me, and now I could feel him. I wanted to turn to him, but could not. In the mirror, I saw him lift his trembling hands over my head. His tender voice whispered in my ear, "May the Lord bless you and keep you in good health. May his cause his countenance to shine upon you, and may he give you peace." I felt a violent pain in my breast. My legs buckled under me and my head grew heavy. "Grandfather," I wanted to call out, but the words stuck in my throat. I leaned my head backward. I wanted to rest against his chest and weep. But he was too far away and my head fell back, back, back. I feel a commotion around me and a sharp pain in the temples. They're sticking me with pins. They've resuscitated me. You may ask, why? Thank you. Shana Tova to all our listeners from all of us here at Radio Sefarad, and especially the English Corner. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with Yoam Gaon singing Noemi Shemer's song, Od Lo Ahavti Dai, I Haven't Loved Enough, from the CD Noemi Shemer's Best Songs. See you next week.
ידיים עוד לא בניתי כפר עוד לא מצאתי מים באמצע המדבר עוד לא ציירתי פרח עוד לא גיליתי איך תוביל אותי הדרך ולאן אני הולך עוד לא אהבתי די הרוח והשמש על פניי עוד לא אמרתי די ואם לא אם לא עכשיו עוד לא שתלתי דשא, עוד לא הקמתי עיר עוד לא נטעתי קרם על כל גבעות הגיר עוד לא הכל עשיתי ממש במו ידיי עוד לא הכל ניסיתי, עוד לא אהבתי די עוד לא אהבתי די הרוח והשמש על פעריי עוד לא אמרתי די ואם לא, אם לא עכשיו עוד לא הקמתי שבט, עוד לא חיברתי שיר עוד לא ירד לי שלג באמצע קציר אני עוד לא כתבתי את זיכרונותיי עוד לא בניתי לי את בית חלומותיי עוד לא אהבתי די הרוח והשמש על פניי עוד לא אמרתי די אם לא, אם לא עכשיו מתי אף על פי שאת פה ואת כל כך יפה ממך אני בורח כמו ממגפה עוד יש הרבה דברים שרציתי לעשות את בטח תסלחי לי גם בשנה הזאת תביני עוד לא אהבתי די הרוח והשמש על פניי עוד לא אמרתי די אם לא אם לא עכשיו ומתי עוד לא אהבתי די הרוח והשמש על פניי